If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. That is a dog. That is not the point of this show.
You think it's a dog. Maybe that's just a jumping off point. You ever seen
that's
the
how
thing?
Weird this episode is. You have already understood that this is a disorienting experience because normally it's Andrew Maine's dulcet tones that are greeting you for this podcast. He is unfortunately unavailable. So today we are not only joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
But also our special guest and dog wrangler himself, Tom Merritt. What's going on, buddy?
Thanks for having me back. It's good to be talking weird things again.
You know, ever since we made the unholy pact that we were going to do a Weird Things episode every week, it is not only the unintended consequence has been that we've been able to bring on some of our friends like Tom. If you are unfamiliar with Tom, seriously, there's nobody who's listening to this who's likely unfamiliar with Tom's work. Tech News Today, Sword and Laser, go check it out. But let's get right into the weird, gentlemen. We obviously, all three of us are part, and we talk a fair amount about our movie leagues, our fantasy movie leagues that we play on NSFW and your show Framerate that you guys do together.
Yeah.
What would you think to be the most audacious movie advertisement you could possibly think? And now by that, I mean one of those big, a big event, like remember for, what was the Super Chronicle? They had, people flying what looked to be like human bodies. Like it was a mechanical, device that they were flying around. And that was like a promotional opportunity for the film Chronicle where teenagers got superpowers and flew around. What would you think to be the most audacious one for a movie that you guys maybe enjoyed or familiar with?
I think that's the limitation, right? Is the ones that we know of. I'm drawing a blank. Can I go to Google for this one and just sort of go on a fishing expedition?
Come on. All right.
I don't know. Like, I didn't even know about the Chronicle one. I didn't know there would be a pop quiz.
Okay. Listen, Brian, don't freak out here. Jesus Christ. We're all here together. So let's say, for example, for Blade Runner, if they were going to remake Blade Runner, you would have maybe they would introduce a some sort of big revolutionary AI or something like that, or they would tie in
ones that actually happened. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, no. Yeah, let's just think of it. Yeah, no, they don't have to actually happen. No,
I see. Okay, certainly makes things easier.
Blue Sky. But do you think I was putting you on the spot?
Yes. Well, and the reason I think that is because that's what you asked us. You asked us which is the most audacious in history. And I don't know of any.
I'm sorry. We can check the tape, but I thought I made that clear. I did not.
Upon further review, don't have.
you only got this setup. No actual punchline. All right. So let's see what's coming up around the corner. I think.
I got one if you need a second.
Oh, go.
Yes, by all means.
World War Z.
Okay.
The movie adaptation of the Max Brooks novel, all about the zombie war. They've changed quite a bit from the book, but I saw the trailer this weekend and it looks like it might be a decent zombie movie if you just forget that it's based on the book and go in and watch it. I think because the whole trailer focuses around what's his name? Brad Pitt.
Yes.
In the car with his family and things start to fall apart. Downtown New York City, middle of rush hour, 200-300 zombies just start walking out into traffic, beaten on cars.
You do,
and And then turns out that they're just trying to hand you pamphlets.
You know what would be great?
Saying, hey, we'll go see World War Z this weekend.
You know what they should also do? Is they should tie this moment like just after a popular local sports team either wins or loses in a major tournament of some variety. And then these quote-unquote zombies could just really just tear stuff up the way zombies, quote-unquote, would. You know, lighting cars on fire.
Except they'll be wearing Yankees hats or something.
Yes. Sure. Rocking over cars, taking on police officer and other authority figures.
And it was all just promotion.
Exactly.
Go see World War Z.
So you would say, all right, so let's say a huge borderline or no, definitely illegal flash mob, or at least a flash mob for which, you know, the destructive violence came from this gathering of
no,
of human
I'm
people.
Not calling for the destructive violence. I think Brian's saying that that would be a nice cover for you to get
no,
away
okay.
with. Some stuff.
No, it's okay. You're
I think in my original
saying
concept,
that there
just,
needs to be
just kind of putting the scare
violence.
Into people. Borderline illegal because of jaywalking, maybe, but that
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. We'll see what other movies are coming out. We got, and it's got to be something big and kind of fantasy or
I mean,
science
it could be of all time. And this is where that of all time thing is. I want to widen it even further. God, so
do you know what?
Like,
well,
just
I
know.
I thought what they did for Casablanca was pretty amazing.
And what was that?
Wait, what did they do?
They started World War II.
World War II.
They wanted it to be an alternate. All of World War II was an alternate reality game. It was an ARG.
Yeah, it was all an ARG.
Got a little out of hand. But
man, I'll tell you what. It really made the entire movie much more believable once that had happened.
Yeah. It was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
What about something like if they made another Terminator movie and secret, like let's say James Cameron comes back to Terminator, and because he's James Cameron, he invests millions.
How would he sound like?
And millions. What, James Cameron? That's how he sounds, right? I've seen him in interviews.
Well, what would he say? Well, he would identify himself by his first name.
He would say, hello, it's me, James Cameron. I'm calling you from the bottom of the sea in my submersive dirigible. And I don't want to quite give him an English accent, but he just kind of shouts a lot. He's like,
sure.
I was thinking as I would want to reboot the Terminator franchise, I realized a thing. I have money. I mean a lot of money. What I'd like to do, and you'll have to take care of this for me, sirs, as I'm going to swim through the center of planet Earth out to the other side, I'm going to need you to actually build a functioning bipedal Terminator-like robot and set it loose on the streets of New York.
By the way, I do love that your James Cameron is a absent-minded inventor plutocrat.
Yes. I'm glad you saw where I was trying to head with this.
Circa 1917.
A Rockefeller age.
Yeah. Yes. Doc Brown. Well, when you have this much money, you get to live in whatever time and place you see fit. That's
Mr.
James
Cameron.
I
believe World War Z is reserved the New York City streets for that period of time.
I'll tell you what, man. Talk about a crossover. We could have James Cameron's plutocratic Terminator robots try to subdue the zombies. I'm using the air quotes again after the sports game.
Exactly.
It's the 99% versus the 1% right there, writ large.
The 1% of robots.
By the way, and the whole like and sports fans obviously listen, like, and they get a bad rap for doing stuff like that. But that's booze. If you let Twilight fans drink. During Twilight,
if they were
and that
old
ended
enough
in a way
drink.
That they didn't like it, they'd be flipping cars.
Well, but the sports fans are not flipping the cars because they didn't like the game. It's because they won.
Well, no, but that's just
so it would be like if the Twilight fans came out and were like, "That was the best Twilight ever."
No, everyone, no, ask Vancouver if that's only reserved for winning teams.
Yeah,
to
that's
riot
the, it. Seems
cities.
Like people like to riot whether they win or lose. They're like,
sure, but I'm just saying it's based on the event happening, not the quality of the event.
No, it's based on the quantity of booze consumed.
That's
times
right. Yeah, okay.
How
right.
much they are into the said event, be it sports or otherwise.
Well,
equals
I mean, take
carnage.
This. The Detroit Tigers
lost
to the San Francisco Giants, and the Detroit people did not riot, even though they lost.
But then again, if they the did,
San Francisco,
notice,
the peace
hello,
sneak,
everybody,
San Francisco
Detroit jokes
burned a couple buses.
So you're saying that San Francisco is worse than Detroit? Just you want to put that on the record? We'll just kind of throw
that
out there.
When you lose, you don't necessarily riot, no matter how much eight ball you've got in you.
I want that on a T-shirt attributed to Tom Merritt with sage words, sir.
Now, funny you should mention the Terminator example, Brian, because during the press for the last Iron Man, there were demonstrations of like where we are, where military technology is in terms of bionic suits and what
we are. Was that an Iron Man tie-in? I mean, I know it was timed with Iron Man, but I don't think that was promoted by Iron Man. I thought it was like McDonnell Douglas or what's the other?
No, it was a joint thing. It was there was Iron Man 2 like logos on the stuff that they were.
And then,
they got
the guy from S.H.I.E.L.D. from the Avengers. Agent Coulson. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. They
had, I think it was one of those things where it's like,
or did they get Chuck
Coulson
from Watergate?
They got Larry Coulson from plumbing.
Yes. I think it was one of those things where they probably brought in those guys.
The plumbers were also part of
Watergate. As like a consultant and then wound up using that kind of stuff later.
God, that's amazing. Like, okay, so yeah, that is a good example. Was that what got you thinking about this question?
No. There's an even better one
I'm sorry.
On the horizon.
It sounds like, I'm sorry, so far we've heard about zombie sports fans and plutocratic Terminators. It sounds like you're saying there's something better.
Listen, they're coming up, and this is happening now. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the midst of quite possibly the greatest, most exciting press gathering and press alerting event in the history of film. Rivaling that of the great Casablanca in the World War II.
I was about to say, the bar's been set pretty high at this point. I'm a little nervous.
We're in the middle of it right now, you and I?
Yes.
Yes, all of us. Mount Rafiu is in New Zealand. It is, in fact, a volcano.
Go on.
And as we return to Middle Earth for The Hobbit, you might remember it as Mount Doom from the Lord of the Rings franchise.
Wait, is it about to erupt?
And it is about to erupt.
Yes! That's pretty huge.
No word yet if the Eye of Sauron will erupt from it.
Did you also hear about all the animals that have died in New Zealand during the shooting of The Hobbit?
Well, yeah, I saw that people were upset about it, but I didn't know if they were like, if it was legit.
Can they not say no animals were harmed in the shooting of this movie?
They most certainly cannot. And apparently PETA is organizing a protest. 27 animals ranging from horse to sheep to other critters have died allegedly because of what they say is, the shoddy conditions under which they're shooting, and which they don't mean like they don't have nice equipment. It's just like, you know, the ground that they're on is pitted and has holes, so a horse is galloping and it, you know, drops a hoof in a hole and snaps its leg.
I don't pretend to know how this really works, but I've heard, like every other ignorant person out there, that PETA is on site at films monitoring this stuff all the time, and that's why you never hear of these sorts of things happening. Was that not true, or is that just a myth? I mean,
the different reports, let me see if I can actually find it.
Heard it's really difficult to do anything with animals on a movie because you have to be so stringent about the conditions.
Yes. Well, in this case, it says here, wranglers say the Hobbit animals died on an unsafe farm. Is what it is. This is from Boston.com.
What is this, Walking Dead?
Yes. This is the Walking Dead. They said they died on a very boring farm.
They died of boredom watching season two of The Walking Dead.
Because nobody would do anything.
All right. Well, no matter. Okay, listen. All these animals could have died from a gunshot wound inflicted by a mad New Zealander.
Or just scrapey or something, like just happened to go through them.
They are kept at a farm filled with bluffs, sinkholes, and other quote-unquote death traps.
Hilarious. But it's a farm.
Listen, they're all going to die if the crater in Mount Rafiu, which is normally filled with snowmelt lake and has a peculiar temperature difference between the lake and the ground beneath it, and has led scientists to issue the warning that it will likely erupt. Dude, that's...
And Peter Jackson's contract to deliver this movie can only be unmade there, PETA.
I think you're right, man. I'm going to say that getting a volcano to erupt probably tops... Maybe not the Casablanca promotion.
No. It comes pretty darn close.
Everything else.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Huh. How come nobody made a good Iceland movie when What's-Its-Face went off and grounded all the planes a couple of years ago?
Oh, yeah, that's right, because the giant cloud of ash all over Europe.
Yeah. It could have been a comedy. Ash hole.
When you go to Iceland.
The guy who accidentally, a Mr. Bean-like figure, who accidentally started the volcano erupting by dropping pop rocks into it.
And then the tagline is like, shove it up your Iceland. It's the ash hole.
Who would be the ash hole? Who do you think would be the guy who accidentally starts the volcano?
Well, he's got to be the Icelandic ash hole, right?
Well, I mean, he could be vacationing. Literally, there's a million ways we can go with this. Yeah. We're selling the script. Yeah,
can
the
we make it Julian Assange just for no reason? Like, he's
that's he can have a cameo, though.
That's where he's hiding. Like
no,
maybe
but we could make it.
No, he goes to hide out. And yes, now he's Julian Assange's roommate.
That's okay. Like so it ends up being like an odd couple kind of thing. It's Julian Assange and the Icelandic asshole.
But we need an actor. Who do you think? Who's the asshole?
Seth Green.
Seth's good.
Seth Rogen. That's
a good Seth Green role.
Seth Rogen.
He can play embarrassed very well.
Or Seth MacFarlane. You have to pick one of those.
Some kind of Seth.
You got to pick one of those hot. Seths.
Pick a Seth. Any Seth.
Seth Rogen? Can we go Seth Rogen?
Yeah.
That's a lot of smoke.
Oh, I guess I'm the asshole.
So
we got it.
Does Julian Assange play himself, or do we get someone else for him?
No, he's played by a former progressive rock artist, Julian Cope.
See, I was thinking like Bjorn Lomborg, the skeptical environmentalist.
What? Why?
Because he looks vaguely like Julian Assange.
And you just felt the need to make that connection here on the podcast.
He's played by the corpse of Timothy Leary.
Yeah.
There we go. Weekend at Bernie style animated. It's amazing what they can do with CGI these days. Ladies and gentlemen, the Weird Things podcast is brought to you by Flying DVDs of Death. It is a podcast that focuses on two things, kung fu movies and drinking. Go ahead and head on over there right now. Michael Walk, whose last name I consistently mispronounce despite the fact that I've known him for over 5 years, is the host of it. So go on, head on over to flyingdvdsofdeath.com or... you can go ahead and check it out on iTunes. Also, they just did the Where Alive, a zombie radio play podcast. So check that out.
When you say we are alive? We're alive or like werewolves that are alive?
No, like we are. Like the contraction we are.
I don't know, actually. Has anyone done a zombie, a werewolf zombie movie yet?
It's like what?
Zombie werewolves?
So zombies would be running around.
Like somebody who's normal, but then the moon comes out and they turn into a zombie?
Yeah. Oh, no. Or better yet, like they're zombies, but then they get bit by a werewolf. And then when the moon turns, like normally they just kind of shamble around and it's no big deal. And then you can keep them outside the fence. But then like every full moon, a few of them go were-zombie-mule.
Where do they go?
Is what they are.
All right.
Well, there we go. I like it.
If you'd like to help advertise on the Weird Things podcast, go ahead and head on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor. For some reason, the other day, because I was listening to some Warren Zevon, I had the idea that like somebody should, or maybe there's a reason why they have not done a zombie version of Werewolves of London with, instead of the au part, do a...
Zombies of London.
Zombies of Georgia.
I guarantee you that's going to be up in 20 minutes.
Kind of like Jonathan Colton's Through Your Brains, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Brains.
Yeah.
Zombies of Georgia.
It's like a zombie with a Chinese menu in his hand.
I can't believe that hasn't happened, because all you need is the karaoke track and then a bunch of clips from Walking Dead. Like, that's a way to just instantly cash in. Like, have you seen
For some reason, I had two musical-related Walking Dead jokes that popped
into
my head.
Gonna get a big dish of beef chow brains.
Well, because, like, have you seen The Sound of Cylons? It's just basically someone rewrote the lyrics to Sound of Silence, and it's not even, like, jokey or clever. It's just an accurate description of what happens in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
With clips of Battlestar Galactica. And it's
people
got, like,
dig it.
It's got, like, a 500 million views.
All right, so here's my other idea, and somebody can take it if they want. And you guys might be familiar with this trope.
Man, we're like a free gold factory right here. Why are we not bottling this stuff?
Here's the deal.
I say a bottle it.
There was a trend. Now it is kind of on the downward. After, like, Monday Night Football used to have the Are You Ready for Some Football song, right?
Yeah.
So when NBC got their Sunday Night Football package, that for some reason they're like, big football games have theme songs where people sing and they just awkwardly plug in, like, the names of the football teams that are playing each other into the lyrics.
Wait, is that what they did with Are You Ready for Some Football?
Oh, yeah, no. So it would all be the song, and 90% of the song, and then it would be like the Dolphins' D is getting ready to play. What the Bears, has their say. Like, you know, it was all, like, these stupid puns, and it was all just, like, ham-fisted. So when NBC got it, they sang, they have Faith Hill singing, and it happens now every Sunday during football season. She sings, like, the NFL rocks on NBC. And so it's like, and it's the same thing. It's a terrible song, and she just, like, puts in these, like, stupid lyrics and everything. But I just think that there is a YouTube channel to be had where you just do that exact same thing, except, like, on Fridays, you come out with your, like, Walking Dead, like the Walking Dead rocks on AMC. Like, is the chorus instead of the NFL rocks on NBC.
Now, can you stick in, like, different major characters each time? Like, so
yeah,
you,
no,
you
know, and
like,
so that's what you do, is each week you see what happened on the last week's episode of The Walking Dead, ready to get, you know, getting ready for this one. So it's like, Herschel got bit, and then we'll see what happens.
Governor's getting ready to do a rape in the night.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Jack, it's a fact. Governor's kind of weird. He's got a wall full of heads, and Merle Dixon's got a beard.
I was been doing some research. Did you know All My Rowdy Friends Are Coming Over Tonight is the song that Are You Ready for Some Football is parodying?
Wait, it's a parody?
It's not a parody, but it's a rewrite of the lyrics of All My Rowdy Friends Are Coming Over Monday Night.
Yeah.
Instead of tonight. Do you want a drink? Do you want a party? Ready to get the summertime started?
Wow.
Is the Are You Ready for Some
with
Football?
And that was
Atlanta Falcons.
Basically, yeah. And I don't know whether or not the Faith Hill song is I think that's an original. That one's too terrible to not be written specifically for that. I can't imagine her actually writing something like that. So there we go. That I think there's, if somebody has a vision for this and finds it as funny as I do, I would watch it every single Friday if somebody put together just ham-fistedly rammed in plot points from last week's Walking Dead and teased us to see what will happen in this week's Walking Dead.
I'll tell you what, it's
the
also,
key of the NFL rocks on NBC.
It's going to be one of those things, too, where every time each one will be released right at the height of anticipation for the new episode. So it'll become ritualistic that everyone pass them around. And because it's not something that'll go on forever, because, you know, the series will each season will come to an end. So it's like everyone will jump in right now. This is a brilliant idea.
Hey, Jack, it's
that's like the funny. Like,
oh, no. The Faith Hill song, Waiting All Day for Sunday Night.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Is set to the tune of Joan Jett's 1980s hit, I Hate Myself for Loving You.
Wow. So it's another just rewrite.
So there we go. Yeah, and that, is that you don't even change it. You are waiting all day for Sunday night.
And bonus, Pink sang the song the first NBC season on Sunday Night Football. And then changed it to Faith Hill.
Amazing.
It's a good change.
She's got Faith Hill.
It's a good change.
It's a good change.
All right. So what other weird stuff you got going on, Justin?
Well, you want to know what, guys? I'm tapped out. I had one topic.
Oh, well, good. Then we'll just open it up. What about... I don't know. Well, I don't know. I kind of want to pick Tom's brain because you deal with news all day, every day on a little program called The Day of News and Technology.
It's actually a takeoff on an Arrows song from 1970.
But, like, as somebody who deals with news, is there ever any stories?
Oh, the days of news and technology. Can I do tech news today? Can I do a song where every day I plug in lyrics of like what happened the day before?
Yeah, you awkwardly be like,
"Hey Jack, it's a fact. Steve Skanofsky's out at Microsoft. Who's gonna replace him?"
It's the day of technology.
No lie, when we would walk down to do Buzz Out Loud back in the day at CNET, Veronica Belmont, Molly Wood, and I would often make up lyrics to go with the A-Team theme.
Oh, that's awesome.
As so we
give,
want.
Give me an example of how that would go.
Now I have to remember the A-Team theme. Steve Sadowski just got axed. He don't work at Microsoft anymore.
Keep going, keep going.
That's awesome.
It's good. I actually want to hear the entire newscast done that way. Like, what do you think of that IS?
Song just lends itself to like pretty much any word you can think of.
You also don't really have to rhyme it at all. Like you can just keep, if for some reason it's melodic enough that it just falls.
So my question is, as somebody who deals with news, do you get any weird things, or what is the weirdest level of news that you run across as you sift through the stories and make sense of it all for us?
Well, see, that's interesting. I used to get weirder things than I do now, because the whole way I approach gathering stories for Tech News Today is to find the stories that I believe are a cross section of what the audience is really into or wanting to hear about. And it's actually something that with several co-hosts I've had to discuss, like, this isn't about what we think are the most important stories of the day. It's not us preaching to the audience. This is, we should try to identify what the stories that are getting all the buzz out there. What are the stories that people are talking about? And then try to bring an element of analysis and maybe debunking, depending on what the story is, to rumors, perhaps. So I've effectively tried to cut out the sources of the weirder stuff because it's unverifiable. But yeah, I mean, there's always weird like technology rumors going around that so and so is going to do this, so and so is going to do that. That's not really the most interesting stuff. I think the weird stuff that's interesting are the stuff we like to put in the randomizer segment, which is our offbeat segment, stuff that doesn't fit in. And that generally revolves around, you know, crazy robotic stuff, bionic limbs, all of that sort of thing. That's the weirdest stuff I see.
And so do you have a particular favorite? The promise of the future? Because
Brian, I don't remember anything. It all leaves my head.
Well, no. I'm not holding you accountable on that. But like,
yeah.
Why are you pop quizzing him, Brian? You're making him uncomfortable.
And I immediately rolled over. I'm like, what I mean is make up a really weird story.
No. I wasn't saying an actual story.
No, like my question is do you find yourself in any way embittered or jaded when, because I do love the randomizer stories because they are, you know, there are all these delightful possibilities. You know, we got a hamster to eat 3 eggs and poop out the answer to a riddle. And is there anything like, do you just take everything with a grain of salt where you don't believe anything? Are you dead inside?
I am. As I admitted on frame rate
today.
When did
the joy get snuffed out inside of you, Merritt?
Yeah, I have smothered my inner child. No, I am very skeptical of everything that I read because I have to be because there, you know, what I do is I build a level of trust with sources, essentially, right?
Right.
So there's, you know, your CNETs, your Ars Technicas, and you know, all right, these guys generally get it right. And so if I do run across something that I'm like a little curious, like, could that be wrong, I look at the author, right? And then I've built up a pattern of like, oh, okay, Timothy Lee, I know him. He's good. Oh, Dan Gooden, he's trustworthy. You know, and I'll still try to probe to sources, et cetera. But if it comes down to them saying, I have a secret source that told me X, if the Wall Street Journal prints it, I give it a high level of credibility. It doesn't mean it's true, but I give it a high level of attention. If a blog I've never heard of prints it, I'm going to ignore it until I find somebody else who says, actually, yeah, I can bear that out from my own sources. So you got to do that. And then there's also these other blogs that come up with the randomizer type stuff where I'm like, okay, we can be a little softer on this because it's not the hard news. It's kind of the kicker. It's the fun story. But we still need to have like an actual scientist who's real from an actual scientific institution quoted, or maybe some video. If there's video, we're golden, because then it really doesn't matter if it's true or not. You can just be like, what a great video. Right. That's amazing, also, even if it's fake.
The news item itself becomes the fact that this video exists, and then your commentary could be whether or not you think it's BS.
I have an ultimatum for you, Merritt.
That's a very polite way to introduce an ultimatum.
It's about time.
All right. What would you rather have? Now, on Tech News Today, any regular listener knows that you have to, especially with high-profile companies like I would name Google and Microsoft, but probably most notably Apple. You deal with a lot of rumors. You are very disdainful with many times the rumors that will come in on, let's say, translated sites from countries that supply components like China and stuff like that. Would you rather have an element of your life that was all of those unconfirmed, just like seriously, three times a day, you get in your inbox, in your email inbox, an unconfirmed, my cousin who lives in China wrote on a blog who says that the iPad mini is going to be in 3D debuting next month, or just a feed of Bigfoot tracking activity from the hills of Russia?
What, for the show?
So there's the trade-off. Maybe one is a little silly diversion, but you can only have one or the other. So that you have an element of your job that is granted kind of like BS.
So I still have Ars Technica and CNET and the Wall Street Journal? Or
right.
This is my only source to build the show.
You're not compromised completely from doing your job. You're just trading one bit of nonsense for the other.
So the question is, like, here's the difference, right? Because on the one hand, like the Bigfoot tracking data, you will always have in a certain category in your mind of amusing diversions of some silly nonsense that likely is just statistical noise and confusion. But the other one says me. You're right. Or suggests.
I see the Bigfoot. He go running around. Say boom, ba boom, ba boom.
Sasquatch.
But the other, though, is also very likely.
You don't even know who that character is. I didn't say his name before or after.
It doesn't. He's unnamed Russian 372.
No, he's Olaf. He's been on the show before. Okay, everybody knows he's Olaf. Go ahead.
I make, the chopping of wood, and then a Sasquatch show. I bring you a big bag of soot.
But the other though would be more interesting noise in that it is related to a field that is important to you. But the question is, and some of these, by virtue of being random, are going to turn out to be right, and you will have had true insider sauce peppered into your inbox from time to time.
No matter what the data is, whether or not those rumors come through, and. Tom, I mean, these are the ones that you basically, to audio listeners of Tech News Today, you do everything but spit on the ground when you mention them on the show.
Which,
you
by the way,
of the fact.
I think that should be a personal challenge. We do want to see you spit on the ground, at least during one rumor. You're like, this story, I think I grow up to be big, strong newsman. I grow beard. And this story you bring me, Atua, I spit on this story.
So those guys that really, no matter whether or not they actually pan out, they really, it doesn't matter, because they're pretty much very lightly regarded no matter what in that process of reporting a new product. So it's either those super early, completely silly, 99.9% completely incorrect rumors about Apple products or a constant feed of where people are reporting the Sasquatch in the hills of Russia? Which would you rather have?
Honestly, neither one will be helpful in doing my job. So
no,
if it's related to my job,
they're both polluting your life.
Toss a coin. If it's related to my life, I'd much rather have the Sasquatch feed because that's incredibly entertaining. I love me some good Bigfoot lore, and that will make me smile. Whereas the rumors are useless. The signal to noise ratio, I mean, yeah, stopped clock is right twice a day, et cetera, et cetera. We only refer to those rumors when they get enough attention by people that you can't ignore them, and you have to say, all right, DigiTimes is saying this. But remember, it's DigiTimes and nobody else is saying it. We try to avoid that unless it's really just everywhere. For instance, there was a big story from a French blog that iMac was going to be delayed until after the first of the year. We absolutely ignored it because the only source of it was the French blog that we'd never heard of before. No disrespect to the French blog. They may be great. They may have accurate sources. But we were like, we don't know them.
Our story, we don't know the source.
Yeah, we're not going to pay any attention to it until we hear somebody else saying, yeah, we're hearing the same thing. In fact, today it came out that the sources who've been digging into this, like the CNETs and the Wall Street Journals, all said, no, there are going to be iMacs shipping at the end of November and early December. The only thing Apple is saying is that the supply might be constrained. And they said that in their earnings call. I would just ignore the feed of rumors because that's like saying, oh, well, there might be two diamonds in these large two-ton trash bags full of rotting banana peel.
They're corrupting your feed, man. They're in your inbox every day. No mail route will save you from these rumors and
speculation.
Can I
use mail route to get rid of them?
No.
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 Okay. No. Not on this show. Don't sponsor.
You don't know what that is.
We've never heard of mail route and their amazing mythical spam-killing powers.
Gentlemen, I lied to you when I said that I was tapped out on stories. I do have another story.
How
weird. UFOs, and I do mean legitimate UFOs.
So a flying object that has not been identified.
Absolutely. Exactly that has been spotted over the skies of Denver.
Over Denver?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a dragon? A luck dragon?
Go ahead. If you go on over to weirdthings.com, you can take a look.
Something to do in Denver when you're dead?
At the video. Basically, what's happening is there was a amateur photographer who would go up to a certain hill in Denver and would point his camera out and record from, I believe, the hours of noon to 2. At that point, and only when he looked back at the footage, did he see UFOs that were moving at a faster speed than his regular eye could see. He slowed it down frame by frame and saw these UFOs. The news report for which we have linked on the Weird Things filmed it with their cameras. And now they have also contacted NORAD and the local FAA and a few aviation experts.
Now just real quick, so we're clear, this is the same NORAD that every year tracks Santa Claus, right?
I just the same NORAD, okay. and NORAD says that they have no record.
Experienced.
they have no record of anything being in the area. The FAA says they have no record of anything being in the area. And yet, there it is, gentlemen.
Now, why does this guy record stuff for 2 hours every day?
I don't know. And also, when the next time that you see his arm, look how hairy it is. I think we found a Sasquatch.
Oh my God, it sure is. It's amazing.
Jesus Christ, sir.
Those really look like bugs flying around.
Bugs, Brian. I posited on Weird Things that they're really drunk aliens.
Really drunk high aliens.
Well,
really,
yeah, I mean,
really drunk aliens. So wait a minute. So he captured this, but then it was independently captured as well by KDVR?
Yes. So then KDVR in Denver went out there and recorded it right next to where Heidi Hamott is standing right now for anybody watching live or watching the video back. They recorded it, slowed it down, and saw the exact same thing. How do you answer that, Brian?
That's what's so great about these things is that when you get reproducible results, and of course that's the first thing you want to see in any kind of scientific investigation of any reported phenomenon is whether or not you can reproduce the results. And if you can, I mean, there are two things that are stated here, right? Which is he didn't see anything with his naked eye that he noticed. And then he, you know, sees these artifacts that appear to be unidentified flying objects going all around, which we see the same thing with orbs. When people snap photos, they're like, I didn't see no orbs. But then I snapped something on this foggy night with a flash, and now there's orbs everywhere. And then likewise with, you know, rods, which are just orbs that are, you know, moving oftentimes. Skeptics will tell you that they're actually because of their bugs flying across the camera, and because of the shutter speed, they show up as, you know, blurs in motion. But we all know that they're paid off by the Illuminati. But yeah, man, it's like
the Illuminati run by bugs.
The bugaloo, but
the Illuminati 2 electric bugaloo.
It's the lightning bug Illuminati. They want to illuminate the world with their butts. Everyone knows that's their secret.
Turn on your butt light.
Let it shine and let it glow.
In our secret society.
We got it.
But listen, they don't really look like, I mean, like to the naked eye when they go frame by frame, they don't necessarily look like a bee or a fly or something. They don't look bug-like.
You sounded like you're inventing a new character just then. They don't look like a bee, like it's some
they
kind
of. They don't look like the insects I'm going to name that don't look like them.
I mean, I'm just saying, this is what, if you look. Listen, Brian, I am only speaking for the YouTube comments.
is that really? I didn't even think to look at the YouTube comments.
Spoiler alert, they are very swayed.
Are they?
Yes, they are. Or at least when I looked at them on Saturday when I posted this.
Well, let's see. Actually, hold on. Now all of a sudden I'm realizing the top comment is, it looks like Sasquatch's arm pointing at the screen showing the UFO.
That was not there. I made that joke independently.
I don't know. Let me just put that up there. It was number one right there. I don't know, man.
I did not write that or read that.
Oh my God, what if we lived in a universe where policy decisions were made by YouTube comment consensus? Like somebody proposed
like
a law.
Upvotes?
Yes, yes.
You that had sounds to like a mediocre Cory Doctorow story.
Yeah, one where he's like, I'm kind of sick. I'm not really trying, but I need to throw a short
story. I don't know. Congress's
deadline.
YouTube comments, right? Boom. There we go. I'm
not
proud
of it, but it's done.
They also, Ron Paul is president, I think. Yes. Yes. Ron Paul is president in this world.
He's a robot. And he's run by Walmart.
Yeah. Bugs. They're bugs.
It's a bug's life.
I mean, way to play around with it, Brian. Really have a good time.
No. Well, I'm just saying. You just got to establish a baseline.
I don't know why my drunk alien theory, inappropriately drunk driving aliens, now apparently that's right out. We can't even talk about it.
Well, I'm just gonna say it's not out. I'm just saying, although I do like this idea of like it's like an alien college film where they come down, they're like, you know, spring break on Earth. They're frat boys.
Exactly. They're shotgunning, and they're what's right around there? Well, it's none other than Coors Brewing Company.
Well, hold on.
Didn't all of their subsidiaries.
And didn't Colorado just legalize weed? So maybe.
Yeah. Why do you think they're there? Hey, man, we're from Xenon 12. We heard y'all just legalized weed. Like, Earth is now their Amsterdam.
Hello, Earth Denver thing.
Hey, man. Dude, you ever tried to speak to an earthling on weed?
We have unfathomably advanced technology to get effed up. Woo!
Floor Mac's a Floor Mac, but they call it a Big Mac.
I don't know. I didn't go to Glaxnuts.
You know what they put all that shit? Ketchup.
It's true. I've seen them. They drown them in that.
As opposed to blood.
Like it's supposed to be.
like it is here on Florgnarf.
Amazing. I wish I could live in. I wish we could vote things into reality. I always think it's curious that people are like, "Do you believe in ESP?" I'm like, "What does it matter what I believe? We can't vote it into existence." So it's like, you know, the
imagine
question.
Imagine we had a system where you could, through your own monetary contributions, vote things into reality, like Kickstarter or Indiegogo.
Oh, but like with for fundamental laws of reality, where it's like you make a pitch. So it's like some...
To who? The dungeon master?
Yes. Or as we call him, God. No,
but I think there's a... Well, hold on now. I think there's a right to say I believe something because maybe not all the facts are in. The preponderance of evidence has not yet, you know, made it to become a law. It's still a theory, but I believe that that theory is right. That's part of science.
It's part of the debate, the open debate of science. I just think
the belief, well, the belief is what leads science. You to pursue the evidence to back up the belief. And then you change your beliefs. But just saying you believe, do you believe something or not is not an idiotic question. That's
no, sort of, I'm not saying it's an idiotic
where's your
one?
Head at?
I just don't think it's a relevant one. It's like, what does it matter what I,
where's your head at is a song.
No, but I think it does. I think it exactly matters because if you don't believe anything, you actually can't make any progress scientifically. You have to have a hypothesis. That's your belief that you're testing.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think you're over.
Wait, hold on, Brian. So what is your point?
Well, my point is that the question that everyone asked, nobody has ever asked me, hey, as somebody who has read more of this than I have, as the preponderance of evidence that suggests that there is psychic powers. Like, nobody asks that. Like, does the evidence support psychic powers? Or do you predict that in the next 5 or 10 years we'll have a reproducible double-blind study that proves? They don't ask that. They say, do you believe in ESP? Which, to me, is way less relevant because, you know, the question is, like, do I believe in the color red? It's like, it doesn't matter. If I don't believe in the color red, that doesn't make red not
exist.
Okay,
how about this, right? Right now, there are several competing theories for the unification of physics. Is it the standard model is insufficient? Is it string theory or is it a holographic theory or is it some other, you know, there's lots of competing theories. Which one do you believe is the right theory? Lots of physicists have a perfectly reasonable answer. I believe string theory will play out and become the theory that proves to be correct.
Yeah. All right. So you're saying that that really asking if someone believes something is just shorthand for saying, you know, which do you predict will be
kind of,
proven
yeah,
correct?
I guess so.
Well, I mean, in terms of when people ask, like, do you believe in psychic powers or something, what they are asking is if you are like them, theoretically, or if you're, if you similarly are fascinated with this and hope that it will be true. To which, I mean, has always been the stated point of this site and podcast that hope all of this is true because we would live in a more magical world if this stuff were true. But that doesn't mean that we think that it is now or even is likely to be, but we hope. That's a cooler way to go through life than to just
I
be
get
like,
where you're coming
no,
from, Brian,
snuff out is, that right
no.
now.
Well, and I'm certainly not saying that.
No one ever goes up and it's not
Ryan's
even the preponderance of evidence.
They
don't ask you, do you believe
right
in something that actually is a reasonable thing to believe it or not, right? It's always like, do you believe in fairies, Brian? And you're like, no.
It doesn't matter if I believe in fairies.
Or do you believe the earth is flat?
It's like your real question is, are fairies real? But instead, by asking me, do I believe in fairies, then it's like, it doesn't matter because it's like my belief will have no bearing whatsoever on whether or not they exist.
No, but I do disagree with you that that's what they're asking. They're not asking, are fairies real? They're asking if you, or they could be asking, rather.
Yes. Many times they're asking.
This is all of our straw man to shape and mold in whatever way we want. So we can have him
say whatever we
want.
Do you believe in straw men?
they're asking if you are a kind of person who could believe in fairies.
Yes. All right.
They're asking if
do you believe in ghosts?
If your mind is open to it.
Yeah. Do you believe in ghosts?
My favorite is I do not believe nor disbelieve in ghosts. I have seen absolutely no evidence. I've never experienced anything. But I also don't see, you know, there's never been a rigorous proof against them.
Have you ever been scared of ghosts, though?
No.
Really? Never? You've never, like, at 2 in the morning gotten the bugaboos and hidden under your covers with the irrational?
I've got the bugaboos in dark places, et cetera, but that's just typical of my species. I don't believe that ghosts are going to get me. There's all kinds of things that are going to get me.
So what is it you're afraid of, though? Like there are times you just
what scares Tom Merritt, and what would you be most terrified of? No,
everything
on
scares
your window
me.
In
Actually,
four
I had this
hours
question at dinner one Rafael. Night. Somebody decided to have a little conversation breaker, and they're like, "What was the scariest thing you ever did?" And I was like, answering this question, I'm scared all the time, like constantly. That's my life is being frightened of everything. So it's not that nothing scares me. It's that I'm not scared of ghosts. I think it's highly unlikely that the thing that I'm scared of that's unknown is going to be a ghost. It's more likely going to be some guy hiding or an animal or just who knows what.
But like, I see, I could talk myself into getting scared of anything. Like when we stayed at the Wolf Manor with Brett Rounceville, there were brief moments when I was standing alone, you know, and it's like, it's allegedly one of the most haunted houses, you know, in the United States, over in Fresno. And, you know, going into it as we decided, hey, let's do this. And it was like five of us. You know, realistically, I knew that I very likely had more to be scared of a hobo stabbing me than anything else. But then very quickly, man, when you find yourself alone in a room and you turn off your flashlight and you start to get
like, man,
it's like, what's the line? I don't believe in ghosts, but I'm terrified of them. Like I could feel that. And I love scaring myself and getting all wound tight.
See, I feel exactly the same way in the same situation. I'm not pretending to be special in some way, but it's not ghosts that I'm afraid of. It's just I don't know what it is. It's unknown. It could be anything. Maybe it is a ghost. Maybe it's a werewolf. Maybe it's a hobo. I leave it open, but I'm still scared.
Yeah. Hobo with a werewolf as a best friend. A novella by Cory Doctorow.
The Wikipedia werewolf. He's constantly morphing.
I don't know. The werewolf is bought and sold by Enron?
No. As the internet types his profile, his powers change. Constantly
adapting. Why is Cory Doctorow Stan Lee?
He gets the powers of stabbing things. Stabbing things, man.
The werewolf, the Wikipedia werewolf, coming next week. 52.
Gentlemen, would you like to make picks for each other?
Yes.
Tom, I know you've been on the show before, but normally we talk about things that we like or things that we've read, and we suggest them to the audience as if you did not know what Let's Do Picks on a Podcast meant. Brian, what have you been up to?
You know what? I'm reading, man, I'm just continuing this kick on the human mind. As you know, it started with The Rational Optimist talking about the way all of our brains are stupid and we can't wrap our minds around statistics. And we,
by the way, you know that you do this biblical chain with every book.
Yes.
It's like, and Adam gave birth to Jedediah, and then Jedediah gave birth to Ezekiel.
If I may, in the beginning there was the Rational Optimist, and the Rational Optimist begat abundance.
No, farther back. Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing.
Abundance begat Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, which begat where I am now. I just finished reading Martin Lindstrom, is that his name? The guy who wrote Biology, B-U-Y-ology, which came out in like 2008. Spell. And it's interesting because it's all about the first fMRI, functional MRI tests about what happens in the brain as we become exposed to different brands. We think we prefer things because we like it better, but then all the ways that we are programmed and the small subconscious ways that stuff plays on us. And it was good. It felt a little bit dated because I was familiar with a lot of the studies that were mentioned in it. But what's really interesting is the follow-up that I just started today, which is Brandwashed. And the foreword's written by Morgan Spurlock, the guy who did Supersize Me. And he's got a movie about branding and, you know, about the way we're manipulated by evil corporations and so on. But it's interesting because Brandwash starts with this is a guy who travels all over the world giving these keynote speeches about his studies on branding. And he wanted to go on a year-long brand detox where he started off and he would not buy a single branded anything, right down to if he was on an airplane, he could not ask for Coke or Pepsi. He had to not know what it was. He could ask for a soda and then just whatever he got was what he got. You know, if he couldn't buy branded vitamin C, so instead he would just, you know, drink orange juice. And it got really difficult with clothes that he had. Whatever clothes he bought couldn't have any, you know, couldn't be polos or Tommy Hilfiger, no brands associated with them. And he lasted about 6 months, and he got into this one moment where his luggage got lost and he had to get on stage to give his keynote. And he had to buy a different shirt because he couldn't wear his filthy shirt that he's wearing. And that one, and it was a crappy, you know, Cypress is what it was. I Heart Cypress shirt that he gave this keynote in a $7 shirt. But like once he had cracked on that and he had broken his pure streak, it was like all of a sudden he was a drunk off the wagon. And he went around buying everything, buying colognes and gifts and Big Macs and really? All this stuff. Anyway, but it's just interesting to see biology is very much a book about, hey, look, these are the tools of branding and you should recognize they're being used in almost this kind of pro-branding way. Whereas obviously in the 4 years since then, we've seen a economic collapse and meltdown and people are trying to spend less money where all of a sudden Brandwash is very much these are the tricks that are being used to manipulate you. Don't you fall for it. Don't be brandwashed. But it's really interesting stuff. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Did that tonal shift bother you? Did you enjoy it? It less?
No. And keep in mind, I'm only a couple hours into it, but it's very stark and very interesting. You could tell that this is a guy who has a field of expertise and has previously written a lot of books about how people can strengthen and position their brands, and that's his day job. And for someone who does that, all of a sudden you realize that that song you've been singing. Not very popular in a world where you know everyone's trying to save money and make ends meet, and it's interesting to see him pivot and be able to take that same expertise but give a more populist message now.
You know, it's funny when we look at that and you're like, oh well, look at how, you know, the tricks of the human mind that they exploit to have you buy their things, when really it's like. And not to say that all that isn't true. It's just a way of looking at it. And it's like, you know, otherwise, like these companies are people that want to cut through, like what Tom mentioned, signal to noise. You know, a lot of things are out there. A lot of things happen. The best, you know, the companies that can cut through, especially now when there are only more and more messages that hit us every single day, is to find a way to remain a sticky idea.
Well, and,
you know?
And weirdly, if we could talk about, you know, branding from a meta point now, that's essentially what we do with Scam School. Scam School is ostensibly a show about how you can be the slimy trickster who comes in and steals everyone's free beer. And we present everything as being totally gritty and dark. But fully half the stuff we present on Scam School, you can find in Cub Scout magic books. You know, it's fundamental. It's simple puzzles, but it's the packaging that and shown in a context that makes it feel underhanded and sneaky.
That you look like shifty ne'er-do-well.
Yes.
Maybe he mentions this in the book, but to me, the evil, the so-called evil of branding is not branding. Branding's actually a very good thing in a pure sense. It's a way of being able to know what you're getting, right?
Sure.
Oh, that is a Coke. That is that I know what that tastes like, and I know when I buy that, that's what I'm going to get. What happens though, and what I think happens, is brands are developed by somebody who has what they think is a quality product, and they work really hard when they're small to brand that, to emphasize their brand, to deliver on that brand promise. To the point where that when they succeed and the brand gets very valuable, suddenly the brand is the value proposition.
Yes. Yes.
And the quality of the product no longer matters. And it's not such a conspiracy where people are like, yeah, so they try to rip us off by making the product really crappy. It's that they don't focus on the product anymore because they don't have to. The pressure isn't on the product. The pressure is making sure the brand stays strong and the product doesn't have to deliver because the product has to deliver when the brand isn't there to deliver the promise, right? And so that's where our psychology plays in, where we're like, oh, but I know Starbucks is a good brand because all my friends say it's a good brand and I see it messaged as a good brand. And so I'm going to drink this and I'm going to say it's great coffee, even if I don't
think
so,
because
it's not so bad that it can disprove it immediately.
Right. Well, and not only are you going to say it's good coffee, but you're going to believe it's good coffee. And part of the reason you're going to believe it is because of the contextualization of what you've experienced up until then. That's a really interesting point, and I'll be interested to see if he touches on that.
Well, it's also, I mean, the funny thing about stuff with declining product quality is that also, you know, you are dealing with very complicated problems, like especially when companies stretch out from like a mom and pop store to, you know, several versions of that to franchising, you know, like all of a sudden you don't have to decide, well, how do I make a good sandwich here in, you know, like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? Now it's like, how do we get a reasonable facsimile of that sandwich at any place where somebody wants to buy a franchise for it?
Well, and essentially, like, this is what the core idea of branding is: scalability. How do we take this experience in a one shop and then all of a sudden manufacture it globally, or, you know, first statewide, region wide, then nationwide, then globally? And that's something that you know, you read when you read like In the Plex by Stephen Levy, they talk about, like, it's built in. Everything we do has to be scalable. We can't have a solution that works right now but won't work when it explodes to 1,000% growth. Anyway, I'll give you a report next week on Brad Walsh.
That's a good, that's a very good call. All right. Tom, do you have one, or do you want me to give you some time?
No, I'll choose National Novel Writing Month as my pick. We are halfway, two-thirds of the way through. And I've been doing this, I've been attempting it every year. If anybody doesn't know what it is, the idea is to encourage you for 30 days.
You're too late.
November,
if you've never heard of it.
Huh?
You're too late. It's only, unless you can write a novel in 11 days.
No, you can. Actually, that's part of it. They're like, it's never too late to start. Go ahead and jump in anytime.
I'm saying it's too late. Bury your dreams, kids.
Hi, I'm Larry Naysayer, and I'm here to tell you National Novel Writing Month is a joke. You're too late. Forget about it. Maybe next year, kid. Good luck.
There's
I'm Larry Naysayer.
Thanks. There you go. it's 30 days of writing. The idea is like, if you've ever wanted to write a book of any kind and you've been putting it off and you need an excuse to get started, this is a bunch of people doing it all at the same time. The idea is you write every day and no excuses. Don't worry about structure. Don't worry about planning. Don't worry about notes. Just get words down on paper. If you do start at the first, you want to average about 1,667 words per day. But in all seriousness, they're like, yeah, you can start anytime. You can start November 29th and just like get writing. The whole idea is that they want people to start writing.
Yeah. And it is great. Now, I have the two fiction books that you've published, were those both NaNoWriMos?
No, the first one wasn't. The first one was just something I wrote when I was living in Austin. The second one, United Moon Colonies, did come out of my first successful attempt at NaNoWriMo.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is super awesome, and it definitely is really inspiring to see. I mean, especially so many people that I know participating in it. But, I mean, I'm joking around also if it's like, you know, the bury your dreams thing. Like, every month can be your novel. It can be NaNoWriMo in December or January, whatever you want. But I think having that structure is really, really fascinating. And doing it now, when so many other people are doing it, is definitely really, really cool. And it's cool to see some of our friend Veronica Belmont is currently doing a NaNoWriMo. And I just randomly, because I thought it, like, she was talking about writing it, and I'm like, oh, what's your main character's name? Just because that's always been an interesting thing. Whenever I've written anything, be they sketches or short stories or anything like that, I'm always at a loss for what to name my main character. Like, I never, I always obsess about it way more than I think I should. And so she was like, Anne, why? Why do you ask?
And so she, did she ever tell you? Did she give it up?
Anne. Yeah. No.
Oh, her name Anne. Is Anne. I thought you said and. Why do you ask?
No. But like, I think it's cool to see like those kind of that like the process of creation as everybody shares that uniformly amongst that community is a really fascinating thing, and I look forward, hopefully, if people like what they read, to reading what people write.
Yeah, it's just a way of getting you in the habit of writing every day. And getting rid of the like, oh, I've got writer's block. Oh, I need to plan some things out. Oh, I don't know. It's like, no, just sit down, write 50,000 words in a month. And then maybe you'll have a book at the end. Maybe you won't, but you'll certainly have a good start and you'll have more practice at writing than you had before. Because every single writer we talked to on Sword and Laser, when we asked them, what are your tips for writers? Universally, they all say write every day.
Yeah.
They may say
yeah.
all kinds of other things. About other tips, but they all say you have to write every day. That's how you get better at writing.
Well, and this is it's one of those things where people ask in the magic world, Scam School is popular enough that a lot of young magicians get started and they're like, oh, how do you make it? Where do you get there? And it's like I tell all of them, I'm like, be fearlessly bad. Find a safe place to be bad and be gloriously, awesomely bad so that you can learn as much as you possibly can to move forward, because in many ways, anyone who gains a skill, you gain it because you have this Groundhog Day-like experience where in the world of magic, you get up, you do a show, it really sucks. You think, wow, what could I have done different? And then the next time you get on stage, it's like you woke up and it's the same day again. You're going through the same show, you make the changes, and eventually you get good at doing that one thing. That's the whole reason that we started doing the live streams, Justin and I, is because we wanted a safe place to do our little internet shenanigan and get good. And if not good, we're certainly prolific at this point.
I think we've determined that now we could at least. Tom, you could go to an actual radio station, but me and Brian, we felt fairly confident that we could get hired somewhere in North Dakota to do a morning show.
Yeah. Which is a big moment for us to realize, and it's
big time.
So likewise, if what you want to do is write NaNoWriMo, because you notice it doesn't say National Writing a Good Novel Month. It says National Writing a Novel 50,000 words. It doesn't say you need to make someone cry. It doesn't say your character needs to have a transformative experience. It doesn't say that man needs to verse the wild or whatever. Instead, it's just like 50,000 words. Just get them out
Boom.
There.
Yep.
So there we go. 50,000 words in one shot, or as Andrew Main calls it, a slow week.
Yeah. Seriously, that guy puts everybody to shame.
What about you,
all
man?
Right. One pick for me. I've been talking nonstop about them. And Brian, I want to make you a challenge.
Uh-oh.
You listen to a lot of audiobooks.
I do.
You are probably the person who has talked to me among people that are talking to me the most glowingly about the Thrawn trilogy. I'm rounding the final base on The Last Command.
Okay, tell me, do I still have credit? I mean, like, I was right.
Oh, no. We've gone beyond whether or not it's good. I love it.
Good.
Now I'm going back to you, and I'm saying you need to listen to the audiobooks.
I need to.
There are moments, especially like in the way that it's done and the way that it is beyond anything I've ever listened to in terms of audio engineering, in terms of the diversity of the voices, especially since we know these voices, and so he has to do a reasonable facsimile without just doing an impression.
Sure.
And then also you cannot put a genre fan who loves Star Wars, you really cannot replace just the element of losing yourself in a story with those hallmarks of the Star Wars universe, with the swell of the scores, which they layer into it, with the trademark sound effects.
Now,
and
this is specifically the 20th anniversary version on Audible,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, no, I don't know if they even have, they are the only unabridged versions on Audible, I do believe. But just go ahead, and Brian, I need you.
I'll do it. I loved them. I love them when I read them. Yes, I need another distraction.
Really, the only thing that the only critique I would have about the books themselves is that it is obviously something that was the product of a time that was devoid of Star Wars, and they wanted, like, this was porn for Star Wars fans, that, like, even to the point where Timothy Zahn, who wrote it, will have these touchbacks, like, whenever a character is in a situation that is similar to something that happened in the
movie,
trilogy,
sure.
Original trilogy,
sure.
They will spell that out, and it's like he was writing on a, and this is not something that happened in the story, but it's like, you know, he was writing on a big barge over a sand dune, not unlike that one day after Jabba's palace when they brought the cartoon. And that's something where it's like, now that we are so much more familiar, and now that Star Wars is not only canon for a devoted pack of zealots, but really, you know, such a larger cultural swath, we are so familiar with that those kind of seem like overkill, but it's a product of its era, and you just have to kind of take it for that.
So,
but it's amazing. The Last Command is the third one. I'm finishing it up now, and it's so goddamn good.
Okay, so I don't know how to get spoilery with this. At the end of this trilogy, there's a character that's
okay,
no longer...
Yeah. Okay, don't mention it, though, because when you told me this initially, like, I thought I was okay with it, and then I was not okay with
okay.
it after.
But I'm just
saying. I got
saying,
more invested in it.
I'm just
don't
saying.
Mention this.
Okay, I won't. Well, let me just... Are you going to read the other two books after them?
I will. Yes, I will love to, but if for people who I am selling this on...
Okay, I won't mention like, I won't mention it, but I'm telling you, you got to read the other two. And I'll tell you what, Timothy Zahn also wrote some other books that I liked a lot. He wrote this. There's one, The Icarus Hunt, that is kind of an adorable space adventure. It's has the science fiction universe that it's set in feels very, very Star Wars-y, but without the Star Wars license, right? So all these names have changed. They're all different aliens, but you have this giant melting pot, this stew of all different alien types, and they all speak each other's language, and they got their own rules as far as hyperspace that goes on, and it's basically he gets this guy who's got a ship, gets an unusual charter, and finds himself in with some cargo that's special, and then some mysterious things happen on the ship, and essentially there's a mystery while in transit with this hot cargo that the guy finds himself with. And that was a really fun one. I really like, if you dig Timothy Zahn, one of his better ones, I think, is The Icarus Hunt.
That is awesome. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we talked about Mount Doom. Talked about Tom's horrifying decision of whether or not to go with Bigfoot or nothing but unsourced Apple rumors. Tom... Thank you so much for joining us yet again here. What would the average Weird Things listener, if they are familiar with your work but not familiar with everything you do, what would they particularly like of your projects?
I would guess maybe some of the books. Merritbooks.squarespace.com, Merritt books.squarespace.com. Where I have United Moon Colonies, the National Novel Writing Month book that I self-published, Boiling Point, the breakup of the United States into separate countries, and The Chronology of Tech History, which is nonfiction, just a listing of, in chronological order, of important things that happened throughout the history of tech.
Yeah, man. Brand new. Hot off the presses.
Yeah.
So check that out. And then also, who do you got coming up on Sword and Laser? Anybody cool?
Yeah, tomorrow we're shooting our next two author's guides. Patrick Rothfuss, author of The Name of the Wind and A Wise Man's Fear.
Dude. And
Paul Cornell, who has written a lot of the Doctor Who universe that bridged the gap between the two TV series. So he created Bernice Summerfield, one of the most popular companions of the Doctor, who never has appeared on a television show.
Wow. Wow.
That's awesome.
Dude,
by the way, I'm going to be up there tomorrow. I want, when you guys come out of the airlock, I just want to walk by the back. I'm just like there's somebody else on the ship.
I want
to walk by Cameo.
You got that sweet mustache. Maybe just get a mop. Yeah, you could just be the janitor.
I just want
a
mop. Yeah,
you could be the bartender. You could just stand behind the bar.
You could be who is the guy on the Love Boat with the big mustache?
Isaac.
Yeah, there you go.
Isaac. I'll be the Isaac. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, what else can I say? But in fact, it's been weird. And Brian, don't I do one addendum? One addendum.
But
there is a Snuggery update. I don't want to say it. I want to leave it for an episode where we're all united.
Oh my god!
But we have had contact by a Weird Things listener at the Snuggery. He has physical evidence, and I will guarantee I've read what it is, and it will continue to keep this debate raging.
Oh, that's great! Raging, nice word. It's a raging.
No, listen, I don't mean to imply anything by that. It will be. It will absolutely be amazing, and we will do it the next time we have Andrew on.
Oh,
all right, that's it. It's been weird.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.